702.
Aubrey is on Twitter.
At Bra Aubrey.
Ari Katz is my guest, and he's CEO of Boston City Campus. Ari, thank you very much, my brother, for joining me this evening. I thought I'd take some of our conversations, our private conversations, and bring them on to air. Are you well?
Thank you, Aubrey. How are you? You're going to get me into trouble tonight. That's
no rest for the wicked, my friend. No rest for the wicked. You and I have been having conversations, sometimes heated, about the purpose of education. Some people have called me somebody who is anti-academic, and I'm not. I'm not anti-academic. But I do hold the position very, very strongly, Ari, that whatever we teach, whether it is at our academic institutions, whether it is at our vocational institutions, whether it is over the training, has got to be education that is applied, that has the ability to be applied. In other words, to be able to solve the real, the practical problems of society. In my opinion, at the moment, I get the sense, particularly at secondary education level, that our kids are being given the mere opportunity only to pass tests and exams, but not to be able to apply what they learn. Would you agree? Would you disagree?
No, on that I actually would definitely agree with you. You know, it was the late President Mandela that said education is the most powerful weapon to change the world. And what's interesting about what you said when you were introducing this topic is that what we need to explore is what does education need to provide us in terms of democratizing its critical thinkers, solving problems of Africa. And if we look at that in the broader context, we see that South Africa is one of the highest youth unemployment rates in the world. Now, that's shocking for a country that is, you know, such a rich country in terms of mineral resources, et cetera. How can we have one of the highest unemployment rates in the world? And I think part of that is related to the education system, unfortunately. And where it bears itself out is that I saw this week they've released the World Competitiveness Survey, and we came 60th out of 64 countries. And that's, you know, when one explores that a little bit more, one of the categories that they talk about there is knowledge. And sort of really about applied knowledge. Exactly what you were saying before. How do we apply the knowledge to solve the problems of Africa? To get our youth employed. Not to get pieces of paper, but to actually get our youth employed. And I think the only way to do that, and we can discuss it a little bit more, but I think the only way to do that, as you said, is to develop learners who are critical thinkers, who can solve problems, and who can adapt to the new technologies. And that's the key. That's the introduction, I think. And I think you're 100% right about that.
Yeah. Please join us in this conversation on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. I maintain, and I'm happy to be challenged on this, that what we are producing, particularly at secondary level, are people that have passed tests, right? And that those tests are based on a curriculum that isn't connected to the realities of this country, of this continent, and therefore doesn't create a context in which whatever is being learned is creating the ability for application of whatever is being learned. Because, Bafwetu, let me say this. If you can't apply the knowledge that you have, how can we call it education? Ari, let me ask you that question. How can we call an education system that is not applicable, in other words, that does not employ people into real work, how can we call it an education? Isn't that an insult to the very idea of education?
It's not an education. I mean, the reality is we've set the bar so low. I mean, if you think about it, when I looked at last year's matric results, let's just start there for a quick second in mathematics. What's scary about it, and 38% of learners decided to write mathematics. Of that 38%, 53% of them could not even get 30%. So when we set the bar so low, are we really producing anything more You know, you spoke earlier about Bantu education. And I ask myself, how much better actually are we, you know, in that we land up with the highest unemployment rate because we cannot apply it. We have, of the 20% of learners who wrote matric last year, managed to get 50% for mathematics. What are we actually achieving? What are we actually achieving? And so I think we need, at secondary level, in high school, it's time for almost an education revolution. We need to break away from rote learning completely. We need to move towards critical thinking, analysis, interpretation, and we need to embrace the world. You know, when you look at that digital competitiveness survey, the countries that scored the highest have the lowest unemployment rates. And you would think to yourself, how come countries that embrace technology have got low unemployment rates? Surely the robots, technology have replaced everybody. But that's absolutely not true. Because they've embraced critical thinking, they've embraced you know, that kind of education system, they've managed to adapt and they've managed to have unemployment rates of 6%. Whereas we have unemployment, the highest youth unemployment rate in the world, one of the highest.
Yeah.
So I think it's time for us to introduce a world-class critical thinking education system. And so we at Boston are going to take the lead. And next year, in 2022, we're going to launch the Cambridge Online Curriculum. We're going to democratize it. And what I mean by democratize it, we're going to make it accessible to the masses. Cambridge is no more going to be the domain of the wealthy. It's no more going to be the domain we spoke of, St. John's, St. Stephen's, et cetera, and they are great schools, but they're extremely expensive, and they're for the wealthy. We are going to democratize it. We're going to come in at a price that is available to the man in the street. We're going to do it online, and we're going to provide world-class education to the man in the street.
And we'll talk a little bit about the online school that you guys are putting together. But what is it that we are trying to achieve, Ari? You know, what is it that we're trying to achieve that the current education system is not achieving? What is it that we can do to make our students more critical in their thinking, more problem-solving orientated in their thinking? So, for example, if you had the ear, for example, of the Minister of Basic Education, for example, and you were to give advice on how the CAPS curriculum could provide that kind of result, critical thinking, responsive to technology, responsive to the challenges of the fourth industrial revolution, what would be the one thing that you would advise?
So there are two things, actually, I would say. The first one is I would make it meaningful for students. So let me give you an example. If I was teaching mathematics, instead of teaching that a straight line is y equals mx plus c, and this is how you plot it on a graph, and it's rote learning, and when you see the formula, this is what you do, I would try and relate that to real-world situations. So I would try and get learners to understand that a straight line is actually nothing more than, for example, a taxi ride. When you get into a taxi, you pay a fee to get in. That's your cut on the y-axis. You pay R5 a kilometer. That's your gradient. And your x is your number of kilometers. That is a taxi ride, and that's a straight line, y equals mx plus c. Now, what do you achieve when you do that? You take this formula that is y equals mx plus c, which we teach in rote learning. When you see the following, do the following, and you turn it into the real world. So suddenly, you have learners, students who can think and who can apply what they're learning. And it does two things for you. First of all, it makes it real. And when it makes it real, it is relevant to your life. And then you're interested in actually learning more. And the result of that is you foster a love for learning. So it achieves two things. When you make it relevant and you apply it, and you spoke earlier about applying it, what education needs to provide us in terms of solving Africa's problems. And part of that is the application, and part of that is the love for learning, which results from the relevance, the meaning, the application.
I was speaking to a friend of mine, a Korean friend of mine, who said something similar to what you were saying, that the principles of mathematics are universal. There's no Korean mathematics, there's no African mathematics, there's no European mathematics. They are universal. He said to me that the issue is, how do you speak that universality regionally in such a way that it speaks to the realities of the area, the place, the people, the time of those people? And is that perhaps not what students are talking about when they refer to the idea of the decolonization of curricula?
So I think it's, again, two aspects to that. One is, yes, the decolonization, where you're able to apply it to problems in Africa, and I agree with that. I'm going to come back to that in a second. And the second part is to be able to be part of the global economy, the world economy, so that I can sell my skills on the technology, on the internet, to somebody in America or China or wherever else it is. I can sit in South Africa and I can sell my skills. And why is that so relevant? The reason is because when I look at the youth unemployment, and it pains me to see this massive youth unemployment, and I think to myself, how are we ever going to solve this problem? I almost come to the conclusion that we alone cannot solve this problem. It's too big. Because if you think about it, if every company in the country were to start employing people, we probably still couldn't mop up all the unemployed people. And so what we need to do is we need to train our people to be able to sell their skills on the global market.
Mm.
And the only way they're going to be able to do that is that they can compete globally. And that's why we've chosen to introduce a global curriculum, so that we can get global relevance as well.
So democratization, globalization, while we create content that is relevant to our regions.
Correct.
Let's take some calls. 011-883-0702 is the number to dial. 021-446-0567. I'm talking about education in South Africa on the African continent that goes beyond just passing exams, so that you've got a piece of paper that says, oh, I've got matric, I've got a degree. That goes to really answering the problems of unemployment, of answering issues of the dearth of leadership, of answering the issue of the scarcity of innovative ideas that are related to the issues and problems of our continent and our country. It's amazing that many of the people that graduate from our universities are scooped up. I'm talking about the excellent ones, are scooped up by companies overseas, because their education sometimes seems to be more relevant to the problems of other countries other than our own. And my question to Ari is, how do we create people that understand our situations, our challenges, in a way that is going to be able to be problem solved? Yeah, because I agree. When you have all of these institutions in a country, when you have all of this potential, but youngsters are constantly unemployed, then there is something drastically wrong. Drastically wrong. So I'd love to take some of your calls on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. King is in Soweto. Good evening to you, King.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, King. What's on your mind?
I'm okay. I just want to pose a question to Ariket. I know he's a very excellent CEO. I've attended Boston City in the early 90s, and it was a very quality college by then. My question to Ari is, now that he has diversified the colleges, the Boston City College campus, it's almost in every city in South Africa. Is he seeing the value as far as the promotional or promotion of education, quality of education is concerned, in diversifying the cities across South Africa? Is there a value added in aiding quality of education in South Africa?
So let me understand, King. Are you asking the question, has Boston City campus contributed to the value of South African education now that it is present in almost all of the cities in South Africa? Is that your question?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
King, thanks very much for your question.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question. So I'll tell you, I'd like to answer it in a number of ways. So first of all, I'd like to roll back a little bit and explain why we went and opened up 47 colleges in every, literally in every province and throughout the country. So the first reason we did that was part of this democratization of education. What we realized was whether you're a learner in Polokwane or in Nelspruit or in Mthatha, wherever you are in the country, you need to be getting access to the same quality of education. The fact that you're living in Mthatha does not mean that you should have any different education from the guy who lives in Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, or Pretoria. So that was the first reason we went there. Second reason was we realized that in many of those towns, many of those places, one of the inhibitors was that the person had to leave home, they had to travel to the big city, they had to pay for accommodation, they had to pay for travel, etc., and the funding actually just wasn't there. And we thought ourselves, instead of the person having to leave home, incur all these expenses and move to the big city, let's take the education to the man in the street. Let's take it in. Part of the democratization. And in fact, that's what we're going to be doing with Cambridge and with our online school, because we've done it in the tertiary space, and now we're going to do it in the high school space with Cambridge. We're saying the same thing. The domain of quality education doesn't resolve only with the privileged. We need to massify it, we need to democratize it and move it to every province in the country. And what's interesting is what we've done some work and some surveys just to answer the question that was posed. And in many of those towns, we've noticed that a lot of our graduates, whether they be in the fields of accounting or whatever field it is, have stayed in those towns and contributed to the growth of those towns. And how do we know that? Because we interact. Remember that Boston has been around 50 years. So over the 50 years, we've seen many graduates in those towns actually become very successful contributors to those societies. And so I'm a big believer of democratizing it and moving education to the people, and hence we're taking the Cambridge curriculum next year, moving it into the high school. We're going to put it online, and we're going to make it available throughout the country.
Ari Katz is my guest. He's CEO of Boston City Campus. We're talking about democratizing quality education. And, perhaps at some point we need to have a functional definition of what do we mean by quality education. I'm still hung up on the idea, Ari, that if our education cannot solve our problems, I don't care which country it comes from, I don't care how many accolades it has, it remains irrelevant. So
the first question I would ask, you know, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
The first question you have to really ask is it going to contribute to the value of my life?
Yeah.
Me as an individual. Forget about the slogans. Forget about the slogans out there. Forget about the fancy words that everybody uses. The real question is it going to add meaning to my life?
Yeah.
And the answer to that question, how is it going to add meaning to my life? The first and most basic, before you even get any further, is it going to provide me with the skills and the tools to enable me to either get employed or go to university or achieve the objectives that I want to achieve in my, you know. And I think the fact that we have such high youth unemployment
I hold the opinion, and again, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, Ari, as we take more calls, that generally speaking, the education systems on our continent, and it is true for our country, was meant for no other purpose than to provide a pool of workers for companies that were brought perhaps here on to the continent, but they were not necessarily, the education system wasn't necessarily to create innovative individuals that would create opportunities that are homegrown for the people of this country and this continent. I want you to think about that. And the other thing that I'd like for you to think about is, we're talking online education. You're talking about the possibility of, I mean, the practicality of an online secondary school by yourselves. Many people find that to be a very lonely process. And education is supposed to be an interactive process where students meet with each other, they debate, they talk. This idea of online education without the connection with other students and talking and debating issues seems and sounds to me like it's going to exacerbate the process of silo type education. I want you to think about that as I take a call from Lwazi in Mabopane. Good evening to you, Lwazi.
Oh, hello, Mosang. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Lwazi. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I have numerous comments, but first of all, let me go back to the issue that you spoke about. And you said the education system in South Africa was mainly meant to create or develop labor or employees here in South Africa.
Yeah.
While I do agree with you, but I also think that you must remember that at the moment, currently as we speak, the very same schools, whether it's public or private schools in the suburban and city areas, right now at the moment, although a lot of black people and colored people are attending those schools, we are still not developing enough black and colored inventors and innovators. So, but yet we still see a lot of white people managing to innovate and invent a lot of things and capitalizing on those things, not just creating them, but actually capitalizing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Elon Musk, for example, Elon Musk was a South African. He only left South Africa, I think, at the age of 18. But he was already, I think him and his brother were already people that were innovative.
Yeah.
And now he's making billions of dollars in the USA.
Yeah.
But going back to what I actually wanted to speak about, I think some of the true causes in South Africa that actually affect the South African system so badly is, first of all, the PASMA. That's one of the first things. So first of all, I'm only 32 years old, so just over a decade ago, I was actually in matric, and some of the subjects, in fact, all of the subjects in the public school that I went to, every single one of them had a pass mark that was below 50%, and not just 49 or 48% or whatever, but they were actually between 40 and I think 30%, which in my opinion means that even if you matriculate with those pass marks, that means you actually understand less than half of the content, whether it's physics, mathematics, or whatever.
Yeah.
So that should not make us expect to develop great engineers, innovators, and inventors when they only understand less than half of the aspect. And then number two, the issue of, which is a thorny issue, I think, in my opinion, the issue of affirmative action, okay? Because I think that every single race has people who are great at teaching, so maybe only 10% in each and every race. But if we are going to push affirmative action so much, the people who actually receive the service from the teachers who are actually the pupils and the students, whether it's in university or in schools, I think those are the people who end up receiving the short end of the stick.
Mm.
Because if affirmative action is implemented in schools, the people who suffer the most are the children, because some of the teachers, not all, but some of the teachers.
So let me understand. Let me see if I'm on the same page with you, Lwazi.
Yeah.
You're saying to me that the fact that we have pass marks that are below 50% is a form of the application of the principle of affirmative action at school level?
No. When I'm talking about pass marks, it's a completely different issue. But when I'm talking about affirmative action, I'm speaking about the recruitment of teachers, when teachers apply for jobs. But if affirmative action is applied, particularly in public schools, but perhaps even in some private schools.
So in a nutshell, Lwazi, and I'm pushing because I've got lots of calls and I'm worried about time. You're saying that we need to have a situation where we push our levels of expectations higher.
Yeah.
Standards to be higher.
Both in terms of the pass mark and the recruitment of teachers. That means we must only, and I mean only, recruit the best of the best. Because if you are going to recruit people based on demographics or whatever, then we are lowering that the teachers. And then last but not least, I only have as one solution that I actually want to give to the professor over there. But I think it's a long one. So I think he would need to get my contact details, because I think this is a system that will actually create independently thinking students and learners who can actually end up inventing things and developing things because our system in South Africa does not develop. And I would like to share it with him, but it's going to take a long time, so it's not going to be enough.
Well, Wazi, listen, I'm going to ask you to leave your details with Ntateng because I'd like to hear more, right? But I think in a nutshell, what you're saying to me is that we need to believe in ourselves a little bit more than what we have.
Yeah.
Wazi and Mabopane, thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated. Ari?
Can I comment on the caller? I think he was absolutely spot on all three points that he made, and I won't take too much time, but I'll just deal with each one of them. He spoke about innovation, pass marks, and affirmative action. Just on each one of those. The first one on innovation. What's interesting is the survey that was done by on the international rankings of the 64 countries. South Africa ranked 44 in terms of research and development. And his point is 100% right. We have to create people that can innovate and develop technologies. We have to create people that are aspirational to lift their companies, not only on the South African Stock Exchange, but on the New York Stock Exchange, because we're creating the next Waze or the next Google Maps or the next whatever it may be.
Yeah.
We need to be developing those kind of people in our schools. And the way to do it, and that leads to his second point, is not to set the bar at 30%. And the way to achieve that is his third point. He spoke about affirmative action, but I'd like to change that a little bit and to say like this. You know, we come from a history of apartheid where, as the two of us have discussed many times, that those schools were, in a sense, designed to mess kids up, okay? And who are the teachers in those schools? And I ask you, how much better are we doing today in terms of the funding that we're allocating to create black teachers who are world-class? And so I would call on corporate South Africa to say, put your money into sponsoring the best of the best to become teachers in our schools. And then you will achieve the other two objectives that your caller was talking about, the pass mark and the innovation. Because you cannot expect kids to achieve excellence when they're sitting in a classroom with a teacher who's hardly more qualified than they are. And that is one of the reasons we went for online. You know, we can debate online separately about the loneliness, et cetera, that you were talking about. But one of the reasons we chose online was because it's the one way of making sure that the standards are uniform for every single student. And we can get the best of the best maths teacher and science teacher and English teacher and whatever it is to teach every single student. We don't have to settle for second best.
I do want you to talk about the loneliness issue, Ari, because and just the access to the machinery, to the technology. I do want you to talk about that. But as you think about it, Titian is in Rosebank. Hi, Titian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks. Go ahead, Titian.
Thanks for having me on the show. So I work in the education sector for an academic enrichment program, and I've had the privilege of working in about 50 different countries with hundreds of schools doing comparisons between them. You know, the truth is most kids in most parts of the world are learning roughly the same things at roughly the same time. But the outcomes for South African kids do tend to be worse. You know, we're worse than a lot of our neighboring countries. And the big difference that we believe exists isn't so much just the schooling system, it's the whole society around those kids. From a young age in South Africa, kids have a very heavy emotional experience with school. They get told that they need to go to school to get a job and that the whole family is dependent on them. It's a lot of stress. And, you know, from the age of like 9 years old, sometimes 8 years old, kids are thinking about job prospects. We take away the joyfulness of education far too quickly from children. And so when we see children in other parts of the world, sometimes teachers are teaching very similar things, but they're just allowing children to experience education in a more lighthearted atmosphere. And it makes a really big difference in how motivated kids are.
Yeah. Titian, I hear that. Before you go into the second thing. But that would be true for a school in Ghana, for example. It would be true for a school in Zimbabwe, in Lesotho, in Botswana. How come they're performing better than us? So in other words, the same socio-economic pressures that would be put on a child here in this country are evidently the same as you would have in other African countries. How come?
That's a really, really good question.
I've just come back
from Tanzania, and we were having that same discussion with some schools near Kilimanjaro. And, you know, a really big difference between South Africa and the rest of Africa is that in South Africa, the whole point of education is to get a job. And so when a child is sitting in school and they're taking in a piece of information, why are they getting that information? It's so that they can get a job one day. And, you know, if you're raised in an environment where you don't think you're going to get a job, where unemployment is really high in your community, it all seems really pointless. And that's the feedback we do get from children. When we work in places like Kimberley or rural parts of Limpopo, where unemployment is really high, kids go into grade 8 knowing that the odds of them getting a job is really low. And so school is really just something that they're being forced through. The difference between, you know, that environment and what happens in a place like Ghana or Zimbabwe is I think they know from the beginning that jobs aren't an option. But the big question that teachers put to kids and that parents put to kids isn't what job are you going to use this in, but what could you do with this?
Hmm.
Not necessarily what can you do with this in a job, but could you do something outside of a job?
Would you agree with me then that in South Africa, the basic education sector was to create a pool of laborers?
It's a really, really interesting question. I would love to agree with you on that, but I think that, you know, this attitude that I'm speaking about exists in schools across all the color lines in South Africa.
Yeah.
So
for me, it's not a matter of color at this point. It's a matter of the ubiquity of an attitude that keeps people from experiencing more than the need to have a job. And that's why I argue that unless we have a serious overhauling of the assumptions that underpin our education and epistemological, pedagogical approaches, right? Unless there's a major overhaul of that, then we will continue to perpetuate the issues that you're raising now, Tishan. And mine is to say, what do we need to do? What is it that needs to happen to change those theoretical frameworks to our education?
Yeah, you're quite right.
I'd like to ask a question.
Sure, go ahead, Ari.
May I ask your caller a question?
Sure.
Because I value the opportunity to speak to somebody who's been, and sounds like you've been in Tanzania and Ghana and all over the show. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
You know, you mentioned that kids who go into grade 8 in rural communities feel, well, hopeless because I'm not going to get a job anyhow. And to me, I think there are two things that I think could change that significantly. I'd be interested to hear what your view on it is. The first one is about changing the mindset from getting a job in South Africa to being an innovator on a global scale and creating role models and showing them how they can actually, if they're innovative and they can get involved in innovative solutions, they can become world-class players. So that's an aspiration, yeah. That's number one, as opposed to being a laborer or a job. That's number one. But number two, which I think relates directly to that, is to make the education relevant. And I know Aubrey's been talking about relevance. To make whatever you study, and I gave the example earlier of mathematics to a taxi ride, which is just a simple example, but to take each subject and make it relevant either to your local context or to this thinking, this modality of innovation and developing technology, et cetera, solving world problems. Don't you think that would provide a huge motivator to kids, number one, to get them more involved in a love for learning, on the one hand, and on the other hand, it would provide them the inspiration to actually to achieve more than a 30% pass rate?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, I definitely think it's the case that education in a lot of places needs to become a bit more aspirational. And there are schools out there which are doing great jobs at that, and principals who do great jobs at helping their children feel like they have the ability to reach above that kind of glass ceiling that's out there. And I also do agree, you know, education can be more useful in immediate life.
Tishan, I'm going to let you go. Great, great contribution. Really, really appreciate it. I'm hoping to hear a lot more from Tishan. Lin Tsui is in Bronco Spirit. Hi, Lin Tsui.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
Very good. Thanks.
Hey, you know, you are very tickling a very great and a very important topic here, which I was always asking myself as to where are we going with this system of our educational system here in South Africa. Right, the quick one. My concern is, you know, when they change things from the secondary level, they don't prepare our kids to be ready for the university. I was listening to the previous caller who was talking about the marks. Then when you say the kids they have to pass with 30% or 35%. How are our kids going to make it at the university? Because the university, the pass mark, it's 50 marks. So our kids, they pass matric with that mentality of 30% on their minds. So our education system is just going down the drain, I can tell you.
Well, we're going to try and change that, Lindsay, in Bronco Spirit. If we start asking the right questions and we start putting and applying the right pressures in our own minds and in our own levels of expectations of ourselves. And I'm hoping to be a part of the changing of that trajectory, and I hope that you will join me. Lindsay in Bronco Spirit, much appreciated. Adam is in Tembisa. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, Adam. What's on your mind, sir?
What's on my mind is how our curriculum is set up at the moment. From the high school level up to the tertiary, when I check, we need to bring the reality to the high school level so that the learners are able to solve problems. Because they are learning about physics, of which they don't apply. When you go to the government school, there is no laboratory, there is nothing there. So it gives the clear understanding that they are not learning anything. In fact, we are focusing on theory. And then theory won't help us to understand what we need to achieve at the end of the day.
Adam, I've got to stop you, my brother. I hear you. I think there is a place for theory. I think there's a place for theory in learning and understanding. Ari, we've run out of time. Can I put up a challenge and say, let's you and I start a process? For example, somebody says here, Aubrey, as much as your guest wants to democratize education by offering online Cambridge system, it will still exclude the poor as the fees will still be too unreachable for them. So not so democratic after all. Could I challenge you and I to go into some sort of partnership? Yeah. Where we can start to really work on popularizing the idea of critical thinking at the level of at the level of secondary education, and do all we can to make this kind of education accessible to as many people as possible. I don't think it's going to be possible to make it accessible to everybody, but as many people as possible. Can we sit down and have a conversation about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, Aubrey, we've spoken many times about setting up a kind of foundation for education to allow people who show promise to access world-class education, even if they can't afford it. And we need to take up that challenge.
Ari Katz, always great talking to you, CEO of Boston City Campus.